gives me great pleasure to introduce the second of tonight's speakers, who is Jack.
Thanks, Dean.
Thank you, Dean. My name's Jay and I'm an addict.
Hi, Jay.
God. First of all, before I start and get on to all my life and get totally self-obsessed, the more self-obsessed I can possibly be right now, I'd like to thank Chris for asking me to do this chair today. The committee for setting up this meeting so that everyone can actually sit in this seat for the length of time that we have here to find recovery, and giving me the opportunity to share. It never ceases to amaze me. I mean, actually, part of me is terrified, right? Part of me is really scared, you know what I mean? I'm kind of putting on a brave face, sort of, you know, trying to hold this cup. The weird thing is the cup isn't shaking. That's the kind of weird thing. Now it's shaking, but it hasn't been shaking the whole meeting. And when I first came into recovery, I couldn't hold a cup without shaking. Do you know what I mean? I was like that all the time. You know, I was terrified to walk across the room and sit in the seat, you know, and it would take, I'd be wandering around thinking, shall I go in, shall I go in? And I did a meeting every day for the first year, you know what I mean? And I still get that feeling, you know, of being a bit vulnerable or a bit, it took me a while to get my head into this space that I'm in now, where I'm feeling of service and I'm feeling like I'm here and I'm feeling like I can share for the 40 minutes, which seems like a bloody long time, do you know what I mean? Because really I don't have that much to say about myself these days. But I was at work today and there's a lot of stuff going on and there was things happening and I kept getting this feeling all day, like, you know, like you're taking a flight in the evening. You know, you just can't do anything because you're thinking that you've got to get to the airport and you just can't wait to sit on that plane and actually get on that plane and actually move. Do you know what I mean? And I had that feeling all day today. I just want to get this over with. You know, I just want to be able to sit in the chair. And the feelings that I had before I got in the meeting, wandering around Trafalgar Square and kind of looking around, went into the National Gallery, and I was like, really worried about what I was going to do, really kind of like anxious about the way I was feeling, and thinking, what am I going to say? I've got no script. I don't know how, you know, I don't have any kind of format of sharing. I'm just here to tell you who I am, you know, and how I got here, and that I'm still clean today. And then Frankie started sharing. Do you know what I mean? And as soon as she started sharing, my seat became something different. Do you know what I mean? I was so grateful that you shared before me. Do you know what I mean? Because I kind of, I find it difficult to sit here. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how I feel when I come into a meeting. I generally know how I feel about half an hour into the meeting. And by the time the meeting's gone on, I've got some kind of reflection about who I am and what I am. And even though I've been clean a very long time and I've practiced these principles, it's very easy for me to drift back into old behaviour, into old thoughts, into kind of like, into my addiction. In fact, it takes no effort whatsoever. All I've got to actually do is nothing. You know, if I just don't come here and I don't phone anyone and I don't do any literature and I don't do anything and I don't phone my sponsor, then I fall back into my addictive patterns easily. I so want to swear. It's like, you know, I mean, there's so little effort, you know, but this takes effort. This takes a lot of practice. This takes a lot of commitment and it takes a lot of willingness. And if you're new in recovery and you're sitting in this meeting and you're sitting down for an hour and a half, whatever this is, it an hour? I haven't even timed it. Yeah, it's an hour and a half meeting. I mean, that's a bloody miracle. Do you know what I mean? I mean, there's no consciousness I had of being in any moment when I came into these rooms, you know. What I mean by that is I was always either living in the past, like, oh, when I did this and when I did that, or I was always like, when I'm going to get there, when I could, just when I get that together, I'll be able to stop, do you know what I mean? I had no present kind of ability to sit in the here and now. And what meetings give us is an extraordinary ability to sit in our to sit in our seat and find out who we are, you know, day in and day out. And the service structure that people do and the amount of work that it takes for this thing to happen is amazing. The fact that a bunch of addicts can get this together is bloody amazing. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's the first thing that I got when I went to a meeting. You know, my mouth's a bit dry, excuse me. Still not shaking. When I went to my, I will talk a bit about using, but when I went to my very first meeting, you know, the attraction for me was that the people in the meeting, I could see or feel that they were just like me. I saw someone on the door who was a greeter, response book for bookshop on a Thursday night. He was a friend of my brother's that he'd kind of been in our circle and all that. And we heard that he died in Israel running guns, right, 3 years ago. And he was 3 years clean in NA, and he was the greeter at my very first meeting. And now I sat in the back of the meeting, and I was in my big coat, you know what I mean? I was like, a couple of DFs in my pocket and a small bottle of brandy with my girlfriend. And I don't know how I did it, but I shared, do you know what I mean? Something came out of my mouth, and I spoke at my very first meeting that I went to. And it was all ifs and buts and maybes. I don't know. I can't remember a word that I said. I remember I remember some of the people in the meeting, actually. But I knew that if I didn't speak, I might not come back. And next day I went to a meeting and got and picked up a key ring. I didn't pick up a key ring in my first meeting. I picked up a key ring in my second meeting. And the girl that had been at the very first meeting came up to me and said, oh, I saw you there last night, and gave me a hug and all that kind of stuff. And she now does a service. I've done loads of services. This is Kathy I'm talking about. I've done loads of service with her. And she and I go to the same home group still today. You know, that was many years ago. It just blows me away when I think about the length of time. And I've grown up in this fellowship, you know. I came in here when I was 25, and I'd used for 10 years from the time when I was about 14. My parents used drugs, my brothers used drugs. My parents weren't like kind of full on, they were sort of children. Oh, I was a child of the 60s, but they were in fashion and all that stuff in the 60s, so there's a lot of drugs around the house. Bit of coke, bit of weed. There's weed on the table, actually. They used to have like kind of Rothmans on one side in one of those pop-up things, right, where you press the thing and a cigarette pops up. And then a sort of bowl of weed on the other side of it. And it was sort of kept away from me, but I knew that, you know, that people were getting high in the house, and it was sort of quite normal in a way. When I was 13 or 14, I can't actually remember, to be exactly honest. There's a lot I can't remember about when I used. There's a lot of memories that have been, I think, dope, actually. I've used a lot of stuff and came in because of powders and all that sort of stuff, but I think weed actually messed up my memory. That didn't happen. Messed up my memory, do you know what I mean? There's a load of stuff that I can't remember, dates I can't remember, you know. And even now, you know, my wife reminds me of stuff all the time about, oh, we went there and saw that person. I mean, I keep stuff together. It's not like I've got Alzheimer's or anything, but I can't remember stuff, do you know what I mean? I have a difficult way of sort of, I'm dyslexic, you know what I mean? But I manage very well, to be perfectly honest. And when I first got high with my brothers, and I was about 13 or 14, it was sitting in their bedroom, putting on a big set of speakers, the cans, that's what they were, headphones. And I got stoned, you know. And then the next night I went in there and got stoned again. And all I could think all day was, going to get stoned again. And it was like a real thing for me, do you know what I mean? It made me feel secure, and I went into that lifestyle and that kind of thing of drugs and wanting to be high and wanting to have that sort of lifestyle around me. The people around me were doing it, and I wanted to do it. And I spent the time from 14 to 25 when I got clean getting high, basically. You know, the way that I lived, the way the people that I hung out around with, the relationships that I had. What defines me, and I think what defines most of us in the room, is that I was going out to a party, or I was going out to, you know, with a girl, or to get a relationship, or whatever I was doing, I would have to get high before I went out of the house. A lot of people take drugs. A lot of people are in, you know, they use socially, whatever that means. You know what I mean? And they do that kind of stuff. But I had to, the way that I performed, or the way that I went out and associated with people, was around drugs. So I needed to get out of it in order to do what I needed to do. And inevitably, often I didn't even get out of the house. You know, I mean, that's the lifestyle that I was leading. And by the time I'm not going to talk that much about the drugs and what I did. You know, I did all the things that I said I wouldn't do. You know what I mean? I hurt all the people that I didn't want to hurt. You know, I had my mum coming around when I was living in certain places, finding out where I was, trying to sort me out, my mum and dad. You know, covering up my arms so my mum couldn't see any marks. Do you know what I mean? And they knew what was going on. They spent about 5 years, I think, in another fellowship to do with families. They were riddled with guilt that they had something to do with my using and my brother's using. And at the end of my life, when I finally came into the meetings, my world was very small. Do you know what I mean? I didn't really have that many friends anymore. I was with my girlfriends. You know, we'd sort of hang out together. Then my world had become smaller. The people that I used to hang out with, I wasn't hanging out with anymore. My using wasn't particularly that big. I wasn't using a lot. I just couldn't get anything else together. Do you know what I mean? I was just about scoring a bit to get out of it. You know, the drama, the glamour had kind of fallen off the edge, really. And part of I always tell this bit in my story. Do you know what I mean? If that's what this is, the story. And it's kind of part of what my rock bottom consisted of is that I got clean in October 1986, right? All kind of little calculators going on in your head. I'll let you know. I'll let you know for those of you that are also dyslexic or whatever it is in a minute. And my dad's birthday was on the 30th of December, and I borrowed 20 quid off him to go out and get his birthday present, and I used £10 of it to score, and I went off and bought him a set of Indian sweets, right, for him. I bought him a box of Indian sweets and I used the other fiver to get around the afternoon. I ended up eating half the sweets and giving him half a box of sweets. Do you know what I mean? And the look on his face was like, he was just really gutted. And I felt that kind of, you know what I mean? I felt that thing, that shame, really, you know, and it'd been going on for ages, you know, and I didn't go into, I'm a recovering addict that never went into institutions. I didn't go into prisons. I came in off the streets, you know, and my parents tried to get me clean a couple of times by putting me in a cottage in the country. And I mean, my girlfriend used to come down by train and I used to nip their car and go off and score with her. She used to bring gear down. And I mean, it's just, you know, it was pretty sad, the whole kind of thing, when I got clean, to be perfectly honest, just when I came into recovery. And I had that sense of shame, really, you know. So when I finally got clean, I came into recovery with my girlfriend, as I said, and we had been together for the last 3 years of our using. I'm going to speak about this because I've got the opportunity, and I never actually speak about Nikki in meetings, really. She's also in recovery. But I'm going to kind of extend a bit into the thing about my relationship. For some reason, I feel embarrassed talking about my relationship. You know, it's like, it's not that it's private or anything, but there's stuff that, because she's in recovery, but I'm going to talk about her a bit tonight. You know, I came into recovery with Nikki. We've been together for the last 3 years of our using, and I'm going to share something in this meeting that I've never shared in a meeting before. And I actually feel like I'm ready to say this. I've never spoken about this in NA, ever. I wrote it in my step five. And this is my heart talking now, right? Because it's the only place I know where to come from when I'm sitting here. But I wrote this in my step four, and I shared it in my step five, and I didn't feel any of it. And it took me 20 years to cry in recovery about anything. And part of the stuff that I cried about, I was on a silent retreat, a Buddhist retreat, and I'd been silent for about 4 or 5 days, and I just burst into tears. And I realised that some of it was to do with what I'm about to say. And but, you know, when we were using, Nikki and I, we terminated a child when she was 5 months pregnant because we were both heroin addicts. And I didn't know any better than that. You know what I mean? I mean, I didn't know what else to do. I was a child myself. I was like 23, 24 years old. And it was a boy, and it was 5 months old. You know what I mean? It's not 5 months old, but five. It was the kind of developed child or whatever you want, however you put that. And I didn't have any feelings about it at the time. And I didn't have any feelings about it when I came into recovery. And it took me years to kind of to feel what that meant. And when we came into recovery together, the two of us, and when we were about 4 years clean, Nikki got pregnant. And she got pregnant, and we went to have our scan at 18 weeks, and she was pregnant with twins, right? We were pregnant with twins. Parenting and recovery, I'll get onto that in a minute. It's like... And we gave birth to... Nikki gave birth to two boys, right? And the first child's name's Toby, and the second boy is Milo. And I believe that the spirit of that child is in one of my children. You know? That's how I deal with it. That's how it is for me. I've never said that in a meeting. I choose a great place to share it. You know what I mean? In front of like 100 people. It's this kind of... It takes ages for us to work through stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's a life... It is, for me, recovery has been a really slow burn. Do you know what I mean? I'm over 28 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I come to meetings nearly... I mean, I certainly come to meetings every week, sometimes two or three times a week. And stuff like I've just shared, it's taken a long time to process things. I've been extremely honest in my recovery all the way through, but I can't tell you that I've felt everything all the time. I can't tell you that I've understood everything when it's come up. But I've been honest to the best of my ability, and I've worked this practice, this program, to the best of my ability. And I had so much shame about that thing that I just shared, you know, but I understand it today. That's just how it was for me, you know, for us. That was addiction. You know, that's where addiction took me. And I was out of my nut that night. I remember not being able to really cope with it. And the only thing that I knew was to get out of it. You know, I left her in the hospital on her own to deal with that stuff. But I'm there with her now. And we're still together today, about 30 years down the line. Do you know what I mean? Me and Nikki are still together now. And when we came into recovery together, we used to go to the same meetings, sit next to each other. You know, I mean, then occasionally we'd sit apart because that's what our sponsors were kind of on about. You know what I mean? And... But I never went to separate meetings. I mean, you know, she's another recovering addict who's there for me. You know, when we were 30 days clean, right? It's not that I've done my whole recovery with her. Do you know what I mean? I'm just like saying, I'm giving you the story about Nikki. But we went away to Sri Lanka when I was 90 days clean. And I did a step chair about 2 days before I went. And it's a step one chair for my sponsor in Rathbone Place. No, not Rathbone Place, Oriel Place in Hampstead. That was a great venue. It's closed now. And my sponsor sat next to me, and I was smoking in those days. And I had all my stuff written about step one on the back of a cigarette packet, you know, kind of doing all this. I haven't got anything now. It's coming. It's got a bit better. But... And I was like all this kind of like sharing all my stuff. But my sponsor was great. He said, you know, you just say what you need to say. And it was a complete drug allot, you know what I mean? My step one, my first chair. And we went off to Sri Lanka, 90 days clean. And what we did was we had a recovery text with us. And after a couple of days, we sat on the beach together, just the two of us. And we read a story out the back of the book. And that was somebody's share. And then we'd have a bit of silence. And then one of us would share. We'd do the readings, all the readings beforehand, and then share the story in the back of the book like someone was sharing, and then share back, you know, share to each other, but no interruptions, right, you know. So it was, and it was amazing. It actually worked, do you know what I mean? And it was just the extraordinary ability of two recovering addicts being able to carry that message to each other, whichever relationship you have with whomever you're with. And that kind of practice, that kind of commitment has stayed with me all the way through my recovery. You know, I still have the same sponsor today that I had when I first got clean in the first few days of recovery, or not a few days, first few weeks of recovery. Martin lives in Brighton. He's my sponsor, and he's still my sponsor today, and I've had him as a sponsor for over 28 years. And one of the things I'm going to share, actually, is about sponsorship. Not that I've got any topics particularly, but if you are with a sponsor and you've got a sponsor, you need to give a sponsor a bit of slack. Do you know what I mean? Because it's hard work. You know, and because I've had it on both sides of the fence. And I've had situations where I've, you know, drifted away from my sponsor because I've judged him, maybe, or... The thing is, he never bloody phones me if I don't phone him. And I always think, well, you should bloody phone me. I haven't phoned you for ages, you know. But it's not how it works. Not between us two. You know, I mean, sometimes he phones me if it's gone on a bit long or something. But the general thing is that I give him a call. And I say one or two words from him to him. And he says, are you all right? You don't sound so good. And I haven't even said anything yet. Do you know what I mean? Because he knows me. He understands me. He's taken me through all these steps. And he's been my teacher. You know, and it's not that he's taught me what he knows. He's taught me how to learn. Because I don't remember what I've been taught. I remember what I've learned. And in this place, in these meetings, in this practice that we do here, day after day, coming back over and over again, keep coming back, we learn stuff. You know, and what we learn in our heads doesn't stay in our heads, because our heads are so full of so much rubbish. Do you know what I mean? This kind of thing. You know, I mean, have you any idea how many thoughts go through your head within a minute? Do you know what I mean? Forget about it. Just forget about your head. Don't rely on your head. Try and listen to your heart. You know what I mean? Because we have the most extraordinary ability to hear in these meetings, to be governed by our hearts. And what my sponsors told me is to, or taught me, is to listen to myself, you know what I mean? And to trust the abilities that I have within myself. And I've learnt to keep coming back to this practice, to see this. I see it kind of more as a practice these days than a program, if you like. I mean, I don't want to be too controversial here, but I mean, this is going to be, some of the stuff that I'm going to share about today is about my understanding. Because my experience has turned into understanding. And understanding is a bit like wisdom, if you like. I'm not going to sound like Mr. Wise here. But I mean, eventually, our experience does turn into understanding. You know, and then you get opinions, and they're not so great. Do you know what I mean? So you have to come back to meetings and think, well, no, I can't say that. You know, because, I mean, struggle with all kinds of stuff. It's a tough gig being awake all the time. Do you know what I mean? This is what we are in this fellowship. You know, we sit here and we are awake 24/7. You know, you're not using chemicals, you're not getting high, you're kind of... So much stuff comes to us at all moments, do you know what I mean? We have to deal with a lot of stuff that other people don't have to deal with, because you can have a drink occasionally or do something, take the edge off the day, do you know what I mean? And we're dealing with addiction and being awake. So it's no wonder that we go completely mental when we're not going to meetings. You know, but it's a practice. You know, it's about keep coming back, keep walking this walk, and recognizing that the spirit, the kind of the love that we have for ourselves and others is expressed through service. You know, it's a funny thing, because I've only thought about this in the last few days. I read something in some literature, which wasn't NA, but it was written by a Zen monk, actually. And he talked about any amount of kind of work that we do on ourselves, or anything we do for ourselves. I mean, this is completely within the steps, basically. Any amount of work that we do on ourselves is worth nothing unless we are of service. Because the service actually gives us the ability to be who we are. Because it's not worth anything unless you give it away. You know what I mean? You sit within yourself, you know, I'm amazing. Do you know what I mean? But it doesn't really, it's not really about me. I mean, this is like what Frankie said at the beginning of her share. This is, you know, I have a lot of stuff that I feel right now. I feel a bit scared. I've got all this kind of stuff. But I'm here to be of service. You know, and And if I can carry the message to one addict in this room today that recognises something that I say, that is tuned in enough to be able to keep you clean for one day, that's probably worth my whole life. Do you know what I mean? That is how big this is. And we are in an extraordinary position to carry this message and to be of help to others through our own addiction and our own suffering. You know what I mean? We are kind of like in here, alive. And there's a lot of people that don't make it here and a lot of people that are dead. You know, and that don't make it to these rooms. And I'm kind of like just maintaining this level of wellness. No, it's hard. Kind of, do you know what I mean? It's sort of it feels quite, all of a sudden, feels quite heavy, but it's not really heavy. You know, in a funny kind of way, the anxiety that I have sitting here right now is that it's difficult to be able to share for 40 minutes because, although I'm doing quite well, I've been coming up to about 25, is that my life is very simple today. Do you know what I mean? I don't have that much to say. You know, there's been a lot of dramas, but there aren't that many dramas. It's difficult. Life is difficult. I've got two twins who are now 24 in recovery, not in recovery, but in my recovery, 24 years old, and one of them suffers from this illness of addiction. Full on. I mean, he makes me look like a lightweight, to be perfectly honest, and he's having a hard time, you know, being in rehab for twice, you know. And we've had to live with that in our house. And his brother, his twin brother, doesn't take drugs, not interested. I mean, how do you work that one out? Twins born into a house, two recovering addicts, one's not interested in drugs, doesn't do anything, drinks a bit with his mates, all that stuff. The other one, chip off the old block. You know what I mean? Absolutely, the apple does not fall. I mean, the apple's not even, the apple's right there. You know what I mean? Falling off the tree. I mean, he's just like another me. He likes the same music. He even nicks my clothes. You know what I mean? They both nick my clothes. But it's hard. It's hard living with that stuff. You know what I mean? Being there for him. It must be hard for him finding recovery with two recovering addicts in the fellowship. You know, I mean, I thought of that only recently. That must be tough. You know, but I am the best parent that he's got. I'm the only parent he's got, and I have an awful lot of support, you know, in this fellowship. I don't go to any other fellowships to deal with the stuff that I have. I come here. I've always gone to NA meetings. I don't go to... this is personal, my experience, and this isn't for everybody, but I personally believe that I'm an addict and that all the answers that I need are within the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'm a complicated person trying to work a simple program. You know, and I find it incredibly difficult to start looking at other aspects of my life. It's hard enough sitting in here trying to work the steps. I don't really want to go anywhere else. You know, and NA has been so good to me. And it's held me when I've needed it. It's carried me when I couldn't carry myself. You know, and I owe it everything. So for me to go anywhere else is not my gig, do you know what I mean? This is where I need to be. And I love it here, do you know what I mean? I absolutely love it here. And all of this stuff that I know or speak about and all of this kind of heart-centered practice that I try to live, you know, and all of this stuff is all born through these steps. It isn't given to me by my sponsor. It's not given to me by you. It's kind of like, it's shown. You show me the way, but I work my way through it by working the steps. You know, and the steps, the extraordinary ability is that, what I found is that I thought I was going somewhere with the steps. I work the steps because I'm trying to get somewhere and I'm trying to get to something. And I'm not trying to get anywhere. What it's doing is bringing me back to myself. It makes me feel and know who I am. It's so that I can sit in the seat and be comfortable, so that I can walk out in the street out there and just be me. You know, the biggest gift that I have been given personally in recovery is that I can just live with how it is. You know, that I can love with what is. You know, not how it should be, not how it could be, not how it was, do you know what I mean? But just with how it is right now. To have that acceptance that it is just how it is right now. You know, and it's taken a long time to get that. You know, a long time to be able to have and experience that kind of freedom. But as I've worked through the steps, and as I've kind of, so much of the step work that I did and I have done in recovery, and this again is my story, you know, how I've done it, is that I've only worked all of the steps with my sponsor once on a formal level. You know, I've only done one step four, one step five. He only introduced me to step six and seven once. But what he showed me was that this is a practice that we go back to over and over again. The steps aren't an event, they're a process. You know, we work step nine, it's not an event. I've done my amends, do you know what I mean? That's it. It teaches us how to be that way. You know what I mean? How to be present for others and how to actually be accountable. And that's what it is. Step five's the same. You know, we share step five, but it isn't like we've just got rid of all that stuff. It's just that we've allowed ourselves to be freer so that we can be ourselves. Discovering yourself in six and seven, hard stuff, do you know what I mean? Six and seven are possibly the hardest steps. They're the most difficult to understand because we are just standing in the way the whole time. And we've got to be humiliated to understand what it means to be humble. You know, and it's just a process. It's just a practice. It's just a way of being honest and just standing there and being yourself. You don't need to be anybody else here. Five. Wow. You just need to be yourself. Do you know what I mean? Don't get in. You know, just listen to what your friends tell you. Stick with the winners. If you're new in recovery and you're here for the first time, congratulations. You know what I mean? This is like, I think in some ways, I only heard this recently as well, is that I think one of the biggest and most spiritual things that we do in our lives is stop drugs and come to meetings. That's a spiritual awakening, as far as I'm concerned. Do you know what I mean? How brave do you have to be to put down drugs and walk into a room? Do you know what I mean? That is like, that's what real people are built of. I mean, that's like hard, that is, to put your hands up and say, I've had enough and I need help. You know, and we are here to carry you. That's what we do here. You know, we learn how to be there for others, and we learn how to love others and how to love ourselves. I don't even know where this stuff comes from. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's extraordinary. I mean, you know, I so much of what I've shared, I didn't know. I could not have spoken like this. I didn't know this stuff when I came in. All I've done is just come to meetings, just being honest, just listened. And the real awakening for me, if you like, the real stuff for me started when I kind of approached the last three steps, steps 10, 11, and 12. You know, in 11, and certainly in step 11, which took me, all the steps have taken me years to learn. Do you know what I mean? Even my step 8 list was like a whole 2 years to write a list where half of it was from a step 4 list, which I had in an envelope. It took me 2 years to give it to my sponsor and say I'm ready, because I just don't do anything unless my back's up against the wall. But I have learned, you know, that it really doesn't need to be that hard after 28 years. You know, but it's just a practice. It's just about keep coming back for others and for yourselves. And remember that this is a family, that we're all here to look after ourselves and to experience this together. Thank you. Thank you.